in here with Francis Maxwell and Brett Ehrlich. It's been a while since the three of us have done a show together.
I think. Finally the restraining order expired and we can all get back together.
It was one night, Brett, all right? I just needed to put my foot down and make sure that it didn't happen again.
That's fine. It's just the legacy of that night lasts forever.
Yes. Obviously, you guys recognize Brett from Pop Trigger.
Yep.
And Francis from TYT Sports. We have an awesome show for you guys today. Some kind of disturbing news in the beginning, but then we have a fun story about butts to really wrap it up for you guys. So look forward to that. Also, be sure to tweet us throughout the show, obviously, with your comments about each story at hashtag TYT Live. But we are also going to be taking some, I guess, suggestions for topics that you guys want us to talk about during the members only part. So let us know that. You can tweet us at Hannah Cranston, at Francis
M.
Maxwell, and Brett.
And at Real Donald Trump. If you do that, I'll just take it all in consideration, think about it for a few hours, and then tweet angrily about it at 3 a.m. If that's okay with you.
Oh, Lord. All right. Let's just jump into this. So a recent study from the Columbia Journal of Gender and Law sheds light on a new sex practice called stealthing. Now, it's being referred to as a trend in the media, but really, it's just a form of sexual abuse. So basically, stealthing is the purposefully removing of a condom during sex without consent from the female partner or male partner for homosexual relationships. Now, Alexandra Brodsky, a legal fellow at the National Women's Law Center and the study's author, contends that stealthing transforms consensual sex into non-consensual and is a grave violation of dignity and autonomy. Further, she says that stealthing is a form of male sexual supremacy that's garnered a loyal and broadening fan base online, where some defend the act as a male right to spread his seed and share tips and success stories and praise one another's methods. Okay, so there is a website, and this man by the username One Sick Mind, which I can agree with, penned a comprehensive guide to stealth sex, okay? Bragging that he has done this over and over with so many girls, I can't even begin to count them. So I read this report, or I guess this article or piece that he wrote, whatever it may be, and it's basically this exhaustive list of tips and tricks that are all sort of, you know, with this core of deception. And he recognizes that it's wrong. He says, I don't condone this. I know that it's wrong. I know that there are consequences to it, but I don't really care because I think that it feels good and I like having this sort of like deception and taking advantage of women these ways. And so he lists things like condom removal, condom sabotage, and something that he calls late pullout. And then this garnered so many comments on this website, and I'm gonna read you one of them. This says, oh, I completely agree with this. To me, you can't have one and not the other. If she wants the guys, fill in the blank, then she also has to take the guy's load.
Thanks, Johnny 2700. Yeah.
You sound like a swell individual.
Yeah, seriously. So there's a ton of comments on this site that are basically with the same sentiment, which is really, really frightening. Now, while stealthing is not legally defined as rape in the US, Brodsky argues that there's a strong enough connection between the practice and sexual assault, and victims should be protected by the law. In fact, earlier this year, a Swiss court actually convicted a man of rape for doing this similar action. And so she started her sort of article in the Columbia Journal of Gender and Law, kind of relating some of the stories of women who have dealt with this. Now, this is also prevalent in the gay community, so I wanna point that out. But she started her article talking about women who have experienced this and really getting into how they felt violated, how they felt obviously deceived. And they said, hey, I don't know if there is a word for this, if this is considered rape, but this is what happened. And so a lot of women are dealing with this. In fact, 1 in 5 women, okay guys, have experienced a partner interfering with their contraception. And this is according to the National Crime Victimization Survey. And this is also called birth control sabotage. So have you guys heard of this prior to this story?
No. Stealthing sounds like the kind of thing you heard about in college, but this is like way dumber than any one of those weird sex terms. Mm. Like it's, the word they're looking for is terrible.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, but if you do this, it might just backfire on you when she's pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, while you might get your rocks off establishing dominance, whatever that means, in the moment, if you get her pregnant, she's gonna have your baby, and you're gonna have to pay for it. So while it might seem like a good idea at the time, it's a really dumb idea in the long run.
Yeah, and so what you were mentioning there about how they're trying to figure out, I guess, what to reference it as when it comes to as a punishment for what it could be punishable for. Like, a lot of the fundamentals that go into these imbeciles that are practicing this are fundamentals that you could transfer over to rape as well. Is they're going against what the woman wants. They're basically going against her permission and what she stated. So the same guy that would be willing to take off a condom whilst having sex, like, it's a pretty similar type of character that would be willing to have sex when someone says no.
Right.
So you're on a slippery slope right there. This is someone that you basically are already going against the fundamental right of a woman to give consent, because she's not giving consent to you doing this. You're doing it because you think you're being smart. You're going to do something that might, as you mentioned, get your rocks off. But either way, there should be some sort of punishable offense, because you're going against a woman's fundamental right to choose as she chooses when she's having sex.
Yeah, she consented to protected sex.
Yes, right. Of course.
I mean, that was going to be my point that I wanted to bring up.
I said it first. Oh, it's okay. Mine. Thank you.
All right. Sold. No, so I mean, that's the biggest issue here. And a lot of the comments in this thread talked about how, well, if she's consenting to penetration, then you can sort of do this, right? She should expect this to happen, that it's like some like innate drive that men have or something like that. I mean, all of these comments were ridiculously absurd. But like you said, Brett, if a woman consents to protected sex, great, but that's what she's consenting to. Anything beyond that is not okay, and it's an abuse. The one more thing I want to comment on really quick is you guys were saying like, oh, get your rocks off or whatever. Like, I do think that there are definitely people who might do this because of, you know, the potential pleasure that can be gained or what they think of as pleasure that can be gained. But I do think it's more of a power.
Yeah, no,
a power
I agree.
Move. It's a way to exert their power and their dominance.
It's this horrendous way of thinking, right, that plagues a lot of guys that eventually will probably use the same excuse if they were ever found guilty of doing any sort of sexual assault as she was asking for it anyway. Did you see what she was wearing? She really wanted it. She's not really saying no, because that's what these guys are basically in their own mind making themselves think. Oh, she wanted to have sex with me anyway, so she probably really wanted it without a condom.
The other thing is the aspect of these message boards where everyone's sharing it, where like not everyone is serious, but there are people who taking it seriously.
Yeah.
This does have all the trappings of, like, I don't know, there's tons of stand-up comedians who have like bits. There's the one that's like, have you ever tried the dolphin where you like change holes and she goes, eh, and that's like a joke.
Yeah.
And no one's genuinely suggesting that you actually try it. It's an excuse to make a silly, terrible voice on stage and have people laugh at it. This might have started as that, but there are people who are taking it seriously, as happens a lot of the time. And it's just so dumb. Like, I want to actually hear from someone who thinks this is a good idea. Tweet me.
Well, I also think you bring up an interesting point, because the way that it is now being talked about in the media, every article that I'm reading is like, hey, this is a new trend.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, this is not a new trend. This is a form of sexual assault.
It's also a news quota.
But like, you know what I mean? They're trying to like make it clickbaity or something like that. And this sort of action should not be clickbaiting, because that might actually perpetuate the issue.
Stealthing is the worst name for it.
Yeah.
It doesn't even kind of have anything to do with the act itself.
Plus, stealth sounds cool. And this is not cool at all.
Yeah, I think. And also, you've established your intent. Like, if they can trace it back to this message board that you did things like you quoted earlier of saying, like, I know it's wrong, I choose to do it anyway. You've just kind of showed your intent to do it from the get-go. And if they trace it back there, then there's your criminal case.
Yeah, very true. All right, moving on. So the man who has the most respect for women ever, Mr. Donald Trump, has canceled Michelle Obama's Let Girls Learn program, and this is effective immediately. Now, internal documents obtained by CNN direct Peace Corps employees not to use the Let Girls Learn name or branding. Now, they may continue some of the Let Girls Learn projects. The Peace Corps will no longer maintain a standalone Let Girls Learn program. Now, the initiative, which focused on educating girls around the world, was run primarily by the Peace Corps and the United States Agency for International Development. So I just want to give you guys a little context of its legacy. Now, in the 2 years since its formation, the program has invested at least $1 billion in programming in 50 different countries. Much of that funding came in the form of donations from more than 100 companies and 11 other nations, some of which gave up to $600 million. Now, the Obama administration had attempted to fortify the program last year, announcing $5 million in private sector donations to Let Girls Learn projects. So they were hoping that some of that would cushion the blow of the next administration, but unfortunately, that is not the case. So this is really, really unfortunate and is just another notch in Trump's belt of the ways that he is running this administration, basically at the cost of, you know, women around the world. But it's so interesting to me because even Melania Trump, during one of her speeches, said that she knew that education is the most powerful way to promote and ensure women's rights.
Yeah.
So why would they cut programming that does that?
Just as Ivanka Trump said in her recent speech that her dad's got so much respect for women because he treats his nice daughter nice, so that means he just treats everyone nice despite cutting funding for Planned Parenthood. Do you know what? I was actually going to just pose this to you guys really quick. Yeah. I don't know. Like, of course, it's a typical sort of move we'd expect from Donald Trump. I guarantee there's probably some sort of, let's stick it to Obama in this as well. You know, like a same sort of like childish sort of insult that you would throw in there, like, you know, we've got all this on the table that we can maybe take funding from and put it somewhere else and pretend that we're really helping the middle class, but really cutting taxes for the major corporations. But I bet he's probably looked at it and went, this will really annoy Obama. And this will annoy Obama if we specifically go after something so fantastic that Michelle Obama put forth to really install some branding.
Yeah, Melania should just put her name on it like she did for Michelle's speech.
Well, I think actually, I was like,
oh, it's the Melania Trump Let Girls Learn.
Well, I think that's a really good point because they say that you can't use the name or branding, but you can still continue the projects, which may indicate that they might be planning to do something similar.
No, they're replacing it with a new project. They're getting rid of Let Girls Learn. They're replacing it with Let Girls Get Sold Into Sex Trafficking and Let Girls Serve Warlords. Because, like, that's the thing. That's the main, I mean, that's a joke, but the main reason for this is there's still a shocking amount of countries where women aren't allowed to go to school.
Right. Yeah.
And this gives them an opportunity. And there's a lot of risk. Like the Malala Foundation, those are the people who are trying to make a difference and change what a lot of folks in America take for granted.
No, I think you bring up a really, really good point. And so I want to sort of let the audience know a little bit more about what you're talking about. So girls' education is extremely crucial, right? So there are countries around the world where girls aren't allowed to go to school or where they're forced to drop out, whether it be because they go through puberty or they get pregnant or their parents need their help or something like that, or the parents don't have enough money to pay for them to go to school, and so they prioritize the boys in the family and things like that. But girls' education actually has a profound effect on not only the women who attend school, but the entire country. So there, you mentioned like human trafficking and sex trafficking and things like that. It also reduces the infant mortality rate. It reduces sexually transmitted diseases, but reduces poverty. But most importantly, if for a businessman like Trump, when 10% more women attend school, GDP increases by 3% on average.
Yeah, I mean,
those
that was
like insane statistics.
That's responsible for a large increase in the GDP in America.
Right.
Like, since women have joined the workforce, that is, I mean, it's a challenge now to raise the GDP because of how many women have joined the workforce, because like that was such a valuable thing to get them to do it.
Yeah. Right.
And it's encouraging when you hit the wall of like, oh, there's so many, all the women are working. I mean, not that they are, but
in general,
they do.
When I did a little searching on the internet to find out kind of the general reaction, it's what you expect from conservatives who are just saying, oh, finally, we're cutting away all this loose ends, like that you don't need to be given our funding towards, and it can go back towards middle class Americans for what their money needs. Like, when are these people going to actually look online and find out exactly what this administration is doing and what they're where they're cutting funds from and where they're looking to try and make their money back? Because the reason I bring this up is the recent article that I was looking at it partnered this along with, oh, why are people still complaining about Marching for Science and the money that we're taking back from the Environmental Protection Agency? And it should be going to middle-class Americans. Where are you getting that money from? I don't understand. If you're not read up and found out that Donald Trump is not giving you any tax breaks and these tax breaks are only going to be for major corporations, this myth that he's giving back to the middle-class Americans is still baffling to me, that people still buy into this shite and they don't understand that he's going to continue to cut from things that he doesn't believe relevant to him.
But Francis, I mean, even with this one particular program, I just, like in the second graphic, it was like much of the funding comes from donations.
Yeah, of course.
It's not like that's going back to the American people. He's just cutting the donations. So the message that we're sending to women in our country and around the world is like with the global gag rule and now cutting Let Girls Learn. So we're saying, nah, you just don't really matter.
And also the kind of top State Department officials in previous administrations have said, if you give me a dollar to spend in aid, I'll save you $5 in military spending. Mm. And these are the kinds of initiatives. But I do think, Francis, your point about sticking it to Obama is very, very accurate.
Yeah,
because there's
so.
Other, you know, the same by the in the same stroke. There's been the elimination of the healthy school lunch program by Sonny Perdue.
And his climate change is a Claire Powell deal as well.
Yeah.
Looking
to
as well as direct ad hominem attacks and quotes during interviews.
Yeah.
You don't need to look very far. It's not very hidden.
No.
It's absolutely in there. Another amazing point is Sonny Perdue is the head of the agriculture or whatever. So that guy is an amazing figure in American history. He was the governor of Georgia. And the reason he became governor of Georgia, the first Republican to become governor of Georgia since Reconstruction. Why were the other ones Democrats? Because Lincoln was a Republican and he freed the slaves.
Yeah.
So Democrat. The reason Sonny Perdue became governor of Georgia was because the previous governor did not get rid of, but reduced the size of the Confederate flag on the Georgia state flag. And that incensed Georgians at large so much that Sonny Perdue, as one of his main like tenets of his campaign, was to change the Georgia flag. And what did they change it to? Yes, they got rid of the Confederate battle flag, which is the one with the cross.
Yeah, the cross.
But if you look at the Confederate flag of Georgia, it is the stars and bars. It is literally the exact same flag as the flag of the Confederacy. The only difference is the Georgia state seal is in the circle of stars. That's Sonny Perdue. Go ahead. What do you want to do? You want to stop teaching kids and you want to make school lunches unhealthy? We lost the through line here, guys. And watch my upcoming Facebook video, because I'll say it right here. They got rid of Louisiana. They got rid of some of the statues that were racist. I am releasing a video, which is a sing along for all the kids, where you can track where all the remaining racist statues in America are. It comes out on Facebook Originals today.
I'm very excited
I'm
for that. All right, let's move on. A federal court has ruled that employers can pay women less than men as long as their previous bosses did too. Now, the Ninth U.S. Circuit of Appeals ruled on Thursday to overturn a 2015 ruling from a lower court in California. Now, the 2015 decision stated that basing women's salaries on their prior salaries was inherently discriminatory, since they likely faced pay discrimination due to gender bias at their former jobs. Now, this case back in 2015 refers to a math consultant in Fresno County. And basically, their rules there and when it comes to salaries is that they take in consideration the previous salary, and then each year they can add 5%, okay? So after working for 3 years at this company, this woman found that her salary was lower than all of the other male math consultants, even the ones who had just started. Okay, so the judge at the time in 2015 ruled that this was just inherently fraught with the risk that it will perpetuate a discriminatory wage disparity between men and women. And so even if this is not based in discriminatory business practices, but it will perpetuate them if you take that into account when assessing the salary for new female employees. Now, cities like Philadelphia, New York City, and the state of Massachusetts actually have legislation that bars employers from asking about past salaries, but not every state does. Now, a lot of states are trying to implement something to avoid something like this, but it's really unfortunate that they basically overturned this ruling back in 2015 that said, no, this is just perpetuating wage disparity. We know we have a pay gap. Yes, it's real. Relax. And
don't tell a man to relax. Men will get, tell him to calm down. We'll lose it.
And so I'm hoping that they reevaluate. Brett, you said they were taking it back, right?
Yeah, so they're remanding this back to the original court that made the decision back in 2015. Essentially, what the lower court wanted to have happen was they looked at this ruling and they said, guys, what you're doing is basing the pay of your current employees on the employment, the compensation they got at their last job. And, you know, the school system was saying, like, all right, listen, we're not being sexist. We're just paying them based on what they were paid before. The lower court's like, listen, if you do that, you're just kicking the can of the unequal pay along. And so the higher court said, well, that's, it would be awesome. I think it would be awesome if the higher court just said, no, you're right. It is just, you know, reinforcing a legacy. It's like saying, well, you were enslaved by your previous owner.
Yeah, exactly.
And now you're, I'm going to enslave you now. What the difference is in the Equal Pay Act, there's four exceptions for equal pay. One is seniority. The other is merit. The other is like quantity and quality of production. So if you're like getting, if you're getting paid for quotas that you're hitting. And the other one is any other factor than sex. And so in a previous decision, in an all-state lawsuit, they were able to say, well, the other thing other than sex was previous compensation. Now, it gets really dicey in like who the burden of proof is on. And usually the woman, this woman would say, listen, they're paying me less than a man. It's on them to tell me why. And so then the school board said there's four reasons why not. And then the higher, and then the lower court, the district court was like, listen, that's all BS. You should be paid equal for equal work.
Right.
And then now the higher court is kicking it down and saying, all right, reevaluate whether they were appropriately saying that basing this on your prior compensation is enough of a justification. So it's not over. It's been remanded back to the lower court, but it still would be way cooler and way easier if the Ninth Circuit Court said, listen, let's all be grown-ups here and realize that if you're basing it on past salary, you're just reinforcing the legacy of unequal pay.
It's absolutely, yeah, it would be much cooler, it would be fairer, and it would be more 21st century if they were able to actually go along with something that would give equal pay around. It's baffling to me that this decision was only made 2015 and people still will undoubtedly probably shout on Hannah's video she did recently about the Google pay gap, which how many people out there assumed that of all companies in the world, Google were being discriminatory towards women?
Right.
I bet you none of them would, because you're probably the same people that just thinks this is a myth made up by the left and that women are actually paid the exact same, and then you throw up all your Tucker Carlson stats wrapped in a bow tie and ended with telling a woman to go and stick to making thigh-high boots, which is a real quote, by the way. Yeah, he does. But that was only because I mentioned it in a Facebook video. That's why it was brought up. There you go. That's one Facebook video mentioned. But it's the fact is that this is still being met with some sort of conflict, that this decision still isn't finalized, that just because some previous company said, well, I'm not going to pay you as much, and someone else is going to go, oh, well, your previous employer, despite how sexist they might have been or they didn't want to pay you equal, it's still the
same way.
The
decision is, the higher court is going to the lower court and saying, make sure that their justification isn't bullshit. That's what they're saying.
Right.
The higher court is saying, these folks said that it's just based on your previous earnings, and then the higher court is saying, make sure they're not just bullshitting about that.
Right, yes, I agree with you, and I think it's important to point out when you're talking about issues like this, is like in some cases people are like blatantly sexist, right? But I think a lot of the times it's subconscious, or there's like a boys club sort of thing, or there's other ways that there can be disparity, or they're just completely prioritizing profit. And if they think that they can get away with paying a woman less because of her prior employment, or because she doesn't negotiate her salary the same way men do, whatever it may be, they're gonna do it. And that's really, really unfortunate. I think there's different ways that we can attack this. One being accepting that the wage myth or the wage gap exists, that it's not a myth, which is something that you would be surprised how many people still believe, and it's disheartening and frightening. And the other component is like, okay, we know that this is an issue. It's in law. Like, let's look at this within our companies and maybe take like a minor hit when it comes to profit, but let's like really fix our country. Like, this is so messed up.
It's a tall ask to ask any company to adjust their bottom line unless they really have to. We're talking
but they
about
do it,
a company,
but they
it's a school
it
district, and the school district is saying, I know, I get it.
I think
but
she's
like,
talking about just in general companies that would be like, look, we're talking about companies here that Fox only finally owned
right,
up to the fact that their boss, one of their lead hosts was sexually harassing women for so long until their bottom line is affected. That's
line.
The only way that will cause someone, so if they can avoid that at all stands, if someone, not just in this school district, but in general, if a company can get away with what you mentioned, maybe someone like a Wells Fargo, and they're employing someone who previously was employed but was discriminated against, they could be like, oh, maybe we'll just give her that job. And it's in the law right now. We could just basically hire her off of the same pay that she was.
Right.
My argument would be that all the other carve-outs for the intent of all the other carve-outs behind, like the exceptions to the Equal Pay Act, work. This one doesn't. Yeah. Like a quota, if I make more than Hannah, or if Hannah makes more than me, because she sells more widgets than I do, that's a quantity thing. That is quality of work and quantity. This is, she was in the break room with her male colleagues, and they were all like, we are the same level with the same experience.
Some of them were actually lower level with like less experience. I mean, that's the really disheartening thing about this story.
I would also say there's an illusion of this, what is the they say that it's objective. There's an illusion of objectivity when their defense is like, well, we just have a very objective scale. You get hired where you get hired at step one, and by step 10, step nine, you're the highest you can get paid. But that doesn't hold. They're paying people less if they can.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a job where any other factor than sex just is so open-ended and definitely should not be on par with be measured by your previous compensation. No. If it is established within that school district that people doing this job get paid this amount at this part of their career.
Right, no. And I think you make a really important point, and I want to sort of illuminate on it. So there's, when you're talking about processes that allow you to, that are like set in stone, right? It's like, oh, each year you can gain 5%, and this year you're gonna, or after 9 years, you cap out, whatever it may be. The problem with that is that when you start women at lower salaries. And so there are tons of studies out there that prove like their first year out of college or grad school, there's still a huge gap between what men make and what women make. And it only widens as they continue their work in the workforce. So even if they're on like the same, like, you know, process or whatever it may be, trajectory, whatever, there's a huge, huge gap. And it's from like the very second, regardless of their experience or their education, whatever. Maybe it's the first day they step out of college, the first day they step out of grad school, there's already that disparity. So I hope that when this goes back to the court, they figure out that this is a way just for other people to perpetuate this gender discrimination, this form of gender discrimination. We're gonna take a quick break and we'll be back in a few. Back on the Young Turks, Hannah Cranston here with Frances Maxwell, Brett Ehrlich. So keep tweeting us with your recommendations for what we're going to talk about during the post-game today. You can do that by tweeting at any one of us here. And I'm going to read some TYT live tweets. I Am Sock says, I think that guys who do stealthing shouldn't be able to complain about stealth taking of 20% of their income.
Way to put two stories together.
I dig that.
That's good. Smarter
let's
than me.
See here. John Blackman says Trump should end Michelle's Let's Move Healthy Eating program and replace it with vegetate with French fries. Yeah.
Nah, but the word vegetate is too much like vegetable, so you can't. He'd have to be like,
oh,
relax.
But do you think he knows what vegetate means?
He probably thinks vegetate means vegetables.
Yeah.
Like that you have to eat vegetables.
Yeah. And then Michael Schnell said something very nice about me, and I'll read it out loud.
What did he say?
Sweet. Well, Michael Schnell sounds like a nice guy.
What are we going to do not say? No, that's all right. We don't need to hear it. Yeah, Derek Martin said, no, go ahead.
He said, stop being so amazing.
That was a tweet that popped up on there. That was filtered
through.
Oh, you didn't. She didn't. I can vouch for that.
I didn't pick them. I'm not reading random tweets. These are tweets that I'm given.
Here's one that came in from old toilet tweeter. Great panel today, but why is Brett Ehrlich dressed like a delivery man who's delivering a package you didn't order? What happened is I got here for Pop Trigger this morning, and then they said, can you fill in on hour two? And I said, sure, but I was wearing a Schleppy t-shirt, which I was going to wear on this show, but then it's so freaking cold in the studio.
It's freezing.
Wait, just because that was such a funny tweet, I got one this weekend that I retweeted, or comment this weekend or something like that, that said I looked like a fake crusty horse effed a salamander.
Sorry about that. I was in a bad mood.
I was laughing so hard. I was like, that's so creative.
Effed a salamander?
There's a horse that apparently is fake and crusty.
Okay.
And he has sexual intercourse with a salamander.
Okay.
And the product.
It's just interesting that a fake horse can get pregnant.
It's interesting.
You never know. You never know.
You never do.
All right. Should we?
Salamanders are amphibious.
Let's jump into this next story here. So Facebook is under fire again, this time because of a leaked document from two Facebook execs in Australia that basically identified sad and insecure teens in the country and gave information potentially that could allow advertisers to target these teens when they are at their most vulnerable. Now, the confidential document dated this year detailed how, by monitoring posts, comments, and interactions on the site. Now, Facebook can figure out when people as young as 14 feel defeated, overwhelmed, stressed, anxious, nervous, stupid, silly, useless, and a failure. Now, these are all terms that were in this document that these execs are using to basically talk about the emotional status, no pun intended, of their users. Now, they gathered this through a system dubbed sentiment analysis, and it can be used by advertisers to target young Facebook users when they are potentially more vulnerable, like I said at the start. Now, the secret document was put together by two of these Australian Facebook execs and includes information about young people, also when they're feeling excited, reflective, as well as other emotions related to overcoming fears. And in the article, it says, Monday through Thursday is about building confidence. The weekend is for broadcasting achievements. Now, according to this report, Facebook is also seeking to sell ads to users concerned with insights gleaned from posts, such as those concerned with body confidence and losing weight. Now, Facebook's data use policy warns users that the company may use the information we receive about you for internal operations, including troubleshooting, data analysis, testing, research, and service improvement, which doesn't totally address the whole advertisement issue here. They might be in the clear in terms of their terms of use, but this could be in breach of Australian guidelines for advertising and marketing towards children. And so, well, I mean, I want to hear what you guys think about it, because I have opinions, but I want to hear
you. Maybe this is just the Aussies' parents trying to figure out how to deal with teenagers, because when I was a teenager, defeated, overwhelmed, stressed, anxious, nervous, stupid, silly, useless, and failure was just Friday night.
I just wrote down all the time. You're right. That is teenagehood.
That is what happens. What, you're going out, you're playing football, next minute you get rejected. All of the above. No, but on a serious note, are we surprised? Are we really surprised that they're going to try to find ways to market to a specific feeling or specific mood?
Right.
I mean, on Facebook, you can literally write that you're feeling stressed, anxious,
yes,
whatever. Like, you can have that notion and indicate it. And I'm sure as a way they're able to track, like, you scroll through your Facebook and you might have been thinking that you were looking at all music sites in the past, a month for some reason, mm-hmm, and all of a sudden headphones pop up on an advertisement.
It's the way
they're able to track.
Which is fine if it's headphones.
No,
but
I get it.
Talking about how I feel emotionally, and just to build on that, if I talk about how I feel emotionally vulnerable because I'm having body image issues, and then it's like, you do need to lose weight.
Right.
Weight Watchers.
Yeah.
Like, that's shitty.
Yeah, and so we don't know if this is actually being used by advertisers yet. I mean, I think that is the concern that people have about this data being available. But there's a really interesting story that I actually was not aware of. So for this week in 2012, Facebook decided to do an experiment. And so what they did was they showed people different statuses. They messed up the algorithm for people, and they showed some people positive ones and some people negative ones. And they wanted to see if it would actually change the people's moods based off the way that they interacted with Facebook and interacted with the site. And what they found was is that it does.
Yeah.
So if they're able to discern how you're feeling and affect how other people are feeling, I mean, that's like frightening.
Well, that's it. That's the proof, Facebook, dear friends over there, that like this is messed up. And you've proven that it's messed up. Mm-hmm. You've proven you can change the way people are feeling. Now, if you wanted to say that Facebook was originally founded as a way to make a more open and connected world, this is not that. This is in you're running experiments, and I get it. They always talk about, listen, there's more work that needs to be done, and every time we do this, we fail and we learn, which is a very Silicon Valley trial and error, fail early and often approach. But in the meantime, these are real people. And if you're looking for something to tie it to, it's just like when Betsy DeVos says that she's gonna like run, essentially just let the market determine how schools are operated. In the meantime, real people's lives are being affected. And the solution needs to, if this is any evidence, be handled with more reverence for exactly what you're doing. You're not just throwing spaghetti against the wall, even if it is a small subsection of your user base.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're not just letting the market sort of parse out, right? It's not just like but I'm just saying like.
But this they is do. Not, what read New York Magazine?
But this is not like a laissez-faire sort of thing. Like these are they're actually like going in, figuring out how these people feel. Figuring out if they can like manipulate people's emotions, that's not just, and like real people's emotions. And I think that's a really great point. Like these are actual humans. And especially when you're talking about kids who are, I mean, I'm going to sound like such a grandma right now, but like for 14, think about when you were 14 and how.
I prefer not to.
How impressionable were you were and things like that. And then to see this sort of thing and know that Facebook has the ability to change your emotions.
No, but I don't think that that's as far-fetched as what you guys are putting forward. Like, of course, if you're on Facebook and you go through and you're consistently, you might not be feeling in a good mood. Regardless, how many times do you go on social media and you either feel better or worse about the situation you're already feeling about?
I feel worse consistently.
Yeah, I'm saying like how many times during this current political climate do you wake up in a great mood and scroll through Twitter? Oh, Jesus Christ, South Korea's trending, North Korea's trending, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So yeah, it's got the impact. But if you start to utilize that, for advertising gain, and all of a sudden people are starting to monitor how you're feeling and how you're reacting to it and try to advertise to you in order to benefit from it, yeah, that's when it becomes really shady. I just think that this study, which I read earlier on, when Facebook were adjusting algorithms, if you start to read more negative feeds and you start to read more negative things, if you're more often than not a person that goes on Facebook to try and either validate something you're looking into or to go and see what people are up to more often than not, your mood will be swung with that. But I don't think that's right, especially when it's such young minds that maybe if they're already feeling down in the dumps, are being lured into certain areas that they shouldn't be lured into.
Well, that's the thing. There's so many different studies that show how social media makes you feel worse, right? Because you're only seeing this, I don't remember who said this quote, but you're only seeing people's highlight reel, right? You're not seeing the behind the scenes. You're seeing what they want to share with the world. So more often than not, it's positive things. So already it's making you feel like shit. And then on top of that, if you're feeling shit and Facebook is like, let's see if we can make them feel like shittier and things like that.
Right.
Like that's just like a compounding effect.
I will say to their benefit, like I'm sure that these words, defeated, overwhelmed, stressed, anxious, nervous, stupid, silly, useless, and a failure, those are the negative words in the list of things they're trying to do.
Easy.
And it seems like, because if they say confidence building at the beginning of the week and sharing successes on the weekend, like those are positive things in this same document. I'm sure they're just trying to find out, and I get that instinct.
Yeah.
The instinct to find out if you're studying something, that's one thing. But and they're also and to Facebook's credit, over the course of the last few months, they've evolved a lot. You know, there's a great, if you should read it, it's like the cover story in New York Times Magazine this weekend. It's about Mark Zuckerberg and his interactions with this one writer over the course of a little while, where he goes back and is like, and it's very obvious that he's trying to take this very seriously.
Right.
But I think what it is the hubris of a programming company that's trying to solve this through some kind of artificial intelligence solution because they have to, because over a billion people use it every day, and it's just not good enough yet. And it's that feeling that they can eventually solve it, that in the meantime, they end up neglecting portions of the population. It's a really sad story.
I do think that's like the core of the problem. I think you're right. I think that's the root of the problem, that they are interpreting this as like data and like numbers and analytics. And I think sometimes it's forgotten that these are people.
And I honestly don't think that there's a nefarious approach to it. I think they're very fascinated with this. And they think it's really great what they're able to do. The intent of the newsfeed was to get the stuff you're sharing, have it shared more efficiently. And I do think on the opposite side of what you're saying about how folks share with a lot of people and you see the highlight reel, Facebook also allows you to share things with your closest friends and confidants. And as a result of that, just imagine if it wasn't online. You can they give you the option to make it feel like it's a like it's the three of us at a table talking, all back and forth to each other. And if they're studying that, imagine we were in this group and someone pops up from under here and just goes, "Hey, you guys feeling sad? How about some Xanax?"
Yeah.
How about you watch? How about you go check out this thing? And it's good. They have tried to use that in a positive way because they have given people the access to the suicide hotline.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
I said it first, so it's my point.
How many times is there troubling people out there that go and look at sites to try and find some sort of refuge, but it can lead you to an indicator that maybe there's someone out there that's either going to harm themselves or harm other people? How many times have we seen with someone that commits atrocities and it's been scrolled back through their Facebook feed that they've been on this page and this page and this page? So again, it's a very thin line. You don't want to invade on people's privacy, but I get how they're trying to understand. But I don't know what you two are talking about with Facebook being some sort of positive environment for people to share. The last, 2 years, I don't think I've saw anyone share like really nice, uplifting pictures. It's more rants, political rants. Political rants.
Don't get me started.
Instagram
on what
is it? Instagram is where you share the highlights of your life.
Very apologetic best practices of how to do a bunch of shit. Like Facebook, it is stuff you agree with and stuff that everyone saying that you like disagrees with intensely. And then us talking about how you can be mad and it's okay.
Yeah. It's true. That's Facebook.
All right, let's move on to the next story. The Netflix series 13 Reasons Why has sparked a lot of controversy and some concern from schools and mental health professionals, claiming that the show might sensationalize suicide and actually put a lot of vulnerable teens who are watching the show at risk. Now, the series has sparked warnings from mental health counselors and others that are expressing concern about the copycat behavior and the glorification of suicide by vulnerable young people. Palm Beach County School Superintendent Robert M. Avosa wrote this letter on April 28th. Okay, he says that the school district personnel have observed an increase in youth at risk behavior at the elementary and middle school levels, to include self mutilation, threats of suicide, and multiple Baker Act incidents. Now, the girl in the show her name is Hannah Baker. It says students involved in the recent incidents have articulated associations of their at-risk behavior to the 13 Reasons Why Netflix series. Now, just to give you guys some background, basically the series is the story of a girl, Hannah Baker, who commits suicide, and she sends these files to 13 people, basically saying the reasons why she committed suicide, and they range from bullying. This is going to be a spoiler alert. Sorry, bullying, sexual assault. And slut shaming, drunk driving, all sorts of different things. So it gets into some pretty heavy material, especially for young people. Now, Netflix has responded to concerns from people saying, "We knew the material covered sensitive topics, as the book did when it was published in 2007. It was based on a book. The show is based on a book. And we worked with mental health experts to show how these issues impact teens in real and dramatic ways." It says, "Entertainment has always been the ultimate connector, and we hope that 13 Reasons Why can serve as a catalyst for conversation," which is a really interesting point that I kind of want to highlight here, because in a statement released by the National Association of School Psychologists, they say that unfortunately, adult characters in the show, including the second school counselor who inadequately addresses Hannah's pleas for help, do not inspire a sense of trust or ability to help. Hannah's parents are also unaware of the events that lead to her suicide death. Further, There's a lot of research that shows that exposure to another person's suicide or to graphic or sensationalized accounts of death can be one of the many risk factors that youth struggling with mental health conditions cite as a reason why they contemplate or attempt suicide. And suicide is a huge issue in our country. Among American young people, those between ages 10 and 24, suicide is the third leading cause of death. And among 12 to 13-year-olds, being exposed to a classmate's suicide was associated with being five times more likely to have suicidal thoughts. And so this show, when you're binge-watching this on Netflix, especially young kids who this is targeted towards and who, you know, Selena Gomez is a co-producer, so she's putting something a lot of young kids are going to watch, are really going to be susceptible to it, especially if they're already suffering from mental health issues.
Right. On the one hand, when the National Association of School Psychiatrists puts out this saying that it's not handled appropriately, that kind of what they're insinuating is this would be a better show if everyone in every step of the way, especially adults, was handled it perfectly. And that happens a lot of the time. And to their credit, they say that they have, you know, things in place to make sure that they do that. However, in certain situations, it just doesn't happen that way. And this highlights it. That said, they do a good job in this of pointing out, like, we need to tell kids that. We need to tell kids. And they do. They say that in their statement, they say that that second counselor doesn't handle it right. And the teachers need to go around to their school counselors and say, this is how you handle it, right? And they need to tell the kids that, listen, our school does not handle it that way. And they say it should be supervised. And they do, to a lot of people's credit, also, last thing, is that they say, you know, the average kid is probably going to handle this the right way. But you got to be careful for the ones that have had suicidal ideation.
No, yeah. I agree with it. And I've not seen the show, so I'm kind of a little in between on whether how much I should comment on the material, because I haven't seen it. I do plan on watching it. But from what I understand is that, exactly like you mentioned, Brett, is that if you go forward and you portray the best possible outcome, you're not gonna have a show that's gonna portray something that is more realistic, because then you're gonna portray the best case scenario, which we all would love to portray. But in order for the dramatic effect, and I'm just thinking about this just from a show's point of view, these people on the bottom line are out to get the bottom line. They're out to make money. They're out to get people to watch this show. So I understand.
Not Netflix.
No, but that's still
the
drama.
The answer is Netflix has lost a shit ton of money over its
okay,
life.
Okay, well, to make something that is more entertaining for people to watch and a drama, is a drama aspect going to be there if you go out and you portray something that best case scenario is planned out? So that's what I'm thinking. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. But how many movies out there are made that portrays the worst case scenario of a specific example? And then people will blame that. Like, how many times has it been blamed that, like, guns, how many times you've seen a movie are the sole focus for this cause? I get there's a situation, and I get that there's stuff that has to be addressed. But these people are trying to make a show as well as that and trying to make it intriguing for people to watch.
No, I get what you're saying, and I do think that there is obviously a value in art portraying things like suicide, like rape or eating disorders and things like that, but it's a really thin line when you're marketing something towards kids who are impressionable and you're not providing some of the adequate education around it that they can use this as sort of like a guide or sort of glamorize some of the aspects of it. So they just really need to, I wish they were a little bit more careful about that.
Right, just really quick, it's not a destination. Saying that this is sensationalizing suicide is not the destination. It is exactly part of the conversation. So tell kids, communicate to them that suicide is not a solution. And also read this statement, because it outlines indicators that children might be considering suicide.
Yeah, lastly, I want to provide anybody who's watching this right now a number to call or text if they do have suicidal thoughts. And we are going to take a break right now, but we'll be back with one more story. All right, back on the Young Turks, Hannah, Francis, Brett. So I promised you at the start of the hour that I would have a butt story. So here goes. So apparently showing off your assets while on vacation is the latest trend on Instagram. There is an Instagram called Cheeky Exploits that basically shows people showing their cheeks around the world. And so we have some of those pictures for you. You're welcome.
Show me now. Oh, what a weird butt crack.
So So obviously these are pixelated because this is YouTube. So we have this one, we have a few more. This one's kind of crazy because there's lots of people around her. But you go, girl. Next one, this lovely man. And then finally, that's a lovely landscape. A lovely manscape.
Look at the canyons. Look at the canyons. It's a view of two canyons. Two disgusting, probably quite soupy canyons.
Alrighty. So some people are obviously think this is funny. I mean, the Instagram has I think over 100,000 followers. I think it's personally humorous. But there are some people out there who are pretty offended by this.
Get over it.
They say that they shouldn't be nude in other people's cities or towns. Especially if there are certain sacred sites that people are showing their butts at. And there are some people, you know, who are offended by nudity, and this sort of, they're saying, perpetuates perception that Americans are annoying and disrespectful.
Well, but you're copycats, for one. How is this a new trend?
Yeah.
You're 700 years too late. William Wallace did this on the battlefield against the English. How do you get under
the skin? Oh, God, stop
You pull up the kilt and you show your backside, and that is how you portray that you're there in that place.
And what happened to him? I saw the end of the movie Drawn and Quartered. You know what I mean? Seemed awesome. And what happened to him? After he got quartered, he called a cop sugar tits. That's messed up.
There was a crack in his logic.
That's not a term.
I think so.
There was a fault in his logic, and fault is a giant. But a fault is a crack in the earth.
So
that's a California joke.
So I this doesn't bother me. I get that people can think it's disrespectful if it's a sacred site or holy site or something that if people are praying or something like that. If there are people around, if there are kids around, I get where there could be some controversy. But if you want to show your bum, show your bum.
Yeah, you're just showing it to the photographer.
Yeah, right? And then if you want it to be reshared on Instagram, that's your prerogative.
CheekyExploits@gmail.com, I believe, is the email address you can send it to, and they will repost it if they deem fit.
Yeah.
This is not a problem at all. I mean, I get it. You don't want to be sexually explicit in front of people. They're in front of you. That's why you're taking from the backside.
But is it sexually explicit, right? I think that's where the weird sort. I guess if your pants are completely
down.
But there's some of them, it's just their butt. And so it's is nudity inherently sexual? No. Right?
All I've got to say is a big no, because Edwin and I both watch Naked and Afraid, and sometimes they don't even blur out the butt cracks.
Yeah, right. Nudity isn't inherently sexual, but it also doesn't need to be offensive. People don't need to be offended by nudity. So I'm hoping that this trend will sort of get rid of some of that.
If you go to Notre Dame Cathedral, they say cover your shoulders, be quiet, don't get naked. I think would also fall under that.
Well, what if your shoulders are covered, but your bum is out? I've never said bum in my life. I'm not sure why this clip I have I say butt.
It's behind you.
I know, and I just
subconsciously
keep looking
it got in there.
I know. I
say
think
us.
So. Arse.
I would enjoy it much more if they were a little bit more creative, you know? If they did those weird, you know, those people that go to the Louvre in Paris and they do the whole finger thing?
Oh, yeah.
Do something creative with
that. I just did that with the Washington Monument in D.C. Look,
the best are the photos of everyone doing that, at the Leaning Tower of Pisa, the lawn in front is just not even lined up, just a bunch of idiots just going.
My friend took one of me doing that and posted it. It's actually very funny. But look, I personally have been an offender of this trend on my own travels.
Where?
And pictures.
You have shown your own.
No, but you do from the back, and maybe your butt's a little out. It just is a different form of a picture.
No. You make it seem like it's a mistake, it's an accident. You have to tell us whether you did it on purpose or not.
When I post Instagrams where my
butt crack.
My butt crack's not out. But it's from the behind.
So that's not what this story is.
I know, but
here's
it's just
the thing. If you want to see Hannah's covered butt, follow her on Instagram. If you want to see her doing this and looking off to the side, follow her on Instagram.
That's very true.
I'm just saying, we talked about this on Pop Trigger, and it's not just you. I had the whole thing about if you like Instagrams where people are going this off to the side, and I don't know if you do this, but if people go, There's no one to the side.
Oh.
It's just them going like.
Absolutely right.
In real time, if you were in that room, it would just be them going.
Crazy person.
It's bullshit. And it ruins the life of everyone around them. And if you like it, it's like buying a blood diamond. You're not the diamond miners, but you're contributing to a grand atrocity.
Wow, what a cause to get behind. I think that's a great point to end on. If you are a member, you can watch our members only post game where we're going to discuss something scandalous at some point.
It's going to be intense.
It's going to be
Let's talk about more butts.
The weirdest thing we've done in public.
Weirdest
thing we've done in public.
All right, let's do that. And we will see you guys tomorrow. Bye-bye.